Chapter 14. The Sinews of War. 1. So long as the South seemed to be winning the war, Jefferson Davis was an esteemed leader. But adversity clouded his reputation. The patent and appalling evidences of inefficiency, demonstrated by the surrender of Forts Henry and Donelson, had lost Davis the confidence of the country, according to the Richmond Whig. Congressman William Boyce of South Carolina lamented the incredible incompetency of our executive that has brought us to the brink of ruin. George W. Bagby, editor of the Southern Literary Messenger and a Richmond correspondent for several newspapers, wrote during the spring of 1862, "We have reached a very dark hour. Cold, haughty, peevish, narrow-minded, pig-headed, malignant. He, Davis, is the cause. While he lives, there is no hope." Davis resented what he considered contemptible attacks by men who engage in strife for personal and party aggrandizement. But he was not free himself from the sins of excessive pride and willfulness. Austere and humorless, Davis didn't suffer fools gladly. He lacked Lincoln's ability to work with partisans of a different persuasion for the common cause. Lincoln would rather win the war than an argument. Davis seemed to prefer winning the argument. Although he rarely defended himself in public, he sometimes privately lashed back at critics in a manner that only increased their hostility. Even Davis's devoted wife, Verena, admitted that if anyone disagrees with Mr. Davis, he resents it and ascribes the difference to the perversity of his opponent. Suffering from dyspepsia and a neuralgia that grew worse under wartime pressures and left him blind in one eye, Davis was racked by constant pain that exacerbated his waspish temper. He recognized and regretted his thin-skinned defensiveness. "I wish I could learn just to let people alone who snap at me," Davis said to his wife in May 1862, "in forbearance and charity to turn away as well from the cats as the snakes." The cats wanted the administration to wage war with more vigor and boldness. "It must become a total war," wrote a Confederate general, "in which the whole population and the whole production are to be put on a war footing, where every institution is to be made auxiliary to war." In the spring of 1862, the Confederate government enacted two radical measures to carry out such recommendations: conscription and martial law. But these acts provoked even more venomous attacks from the snakes. By the winter of 1861, through 1862, the bloom had faded from Southern enthusiasm for the war. "The romance of the thing is entirely worn off," wrote a soldier with Stonewall Jackson's brigade in the Shenandoah Valley, "not only with myself, but with the whole army." The South still had more soldiers than it had weapons to arm them, but that state of affairs promised to come to an abrupt and disastrous end in the spring. Not because of a windfall of weapons, but because the one-year enlistments of nearly half the troops would expire. Few of them seemed ready to re-enlist. "If I live this 12 months out, I intend to try mighty hard to keep out of the army," wrote another Virginia soldier in January 1862. "I don't think I could stand it another year." It looked like the army might melt away just as the Yankees began their spring offensives. The Confederate Congress initially addressed this problem within the traditional framework of voluntarism. In December 1861, it enacted legislation granting a $50 bounty and a 60-day furlough to one-year men who reenlisted, with the additional proviso that they could join new regiments and elect new officers if they wished. As one analyst commented, "A worse